You're listening to The Quarterdeck with Benjamin Strong and Coast Guard Admiral Jim Watson.
Hi, it's Ben Strong from Amver.com, and I'm joined today by Captain Linda Fagan, the captain of the port for New York Harbor. How are you, Captain?
I'm fine. Thank you, Benjamin.
I appreciate you taking some time to talk with the Quarterdeck podcast listeners. And really, I asked you to come down today so that we could talk about the... It's obviously, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks here in New York, and the maritime community has both felt the consequences of that attack, and also during the incident that occurred in Lower Manhattan, the maritime sector played a part in the evacuation as well. Mm-hmm. So perhaps, and I know that you're preparing for different events that are going on around the city to commemorate the anniversary, but if we can just for a minute briefly describe kind of the Coast Guard's role and the greater maritime role in the evacuation of Lower Manhattan on that day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. Obviously, it was a major event that involved evacuation of anywhere from 350,000 to 500,000 people off of Lower Manhattan. It was the first time that the Coast Guard used a kind of calling all boats approach and sought the support of the broad maritime community to come and respond to Lower Manhattan and help evacuate people from the area down now near the World Trade Center site. And it certainly, what it highlights for me as I reflect back on that time 10 years ago and look at where we are now in the port with the port community is just really how resilient the port community is here in the greater New York and New Jersey area, and how much capacity, just sort of inherent capacity exists in the system, whether it's New York waterways taxis or the Staten Island Ferry, all of the tugboat and towing communities here, the cruise industry. It's an exceptionally diverse group of maritime professionals that we have here in New York that all lean in and get done what needs to get done in the times of need or potential big responses.
Well, and while the September 11th attack was extraordinary, incidents occurring in New York Harbor aren't that uncommon. I mean, there was U.S. Air Flight 1549 that went in the water, and I believe it was civilian waterway taxis that assisted mm-hmm. in search and rescue there. There have been barge fires. There have been, I mean, how often does something kind of come up here in the harbor that you have to deal with?
Here in New York, the Coast Guard in New York is we're the largest operational sector command that the Coast Guard has. All total, between the sector and our outlying subunits, we have over 1,000 personnel assigned, a number of small boats, cutters. We conduct all 11 Coast Guard missions in the sector here, including icebreaking up the Hudson River for a good portion of the winter. But it we truly are a 24/7 operation and have a large inherent capacity in our command center to manage all that goes on in the maritime environment here. It is truly a 24/7 operation. I never come in the morning and wonder, gee, what will I do with myself today? There's always something going on. The vessel traffic system here manages over 1,400 vessel movements a day. And so that's just part of the background buzz of activity that goes on. We move more petroleum product through here than most other ports. A lot of it will come in by tank ship, or it'll come in by one of the pipelines into a facility in New Jersey, goes on to barges, and then up into Long Island Sound. So with just that number of vessel movements occurring literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, things happen. We have marine casualties in the port. We're out investigating accidents. We're out doing boardings. And then we're obviously spending quite a bit of time focused on our ports and waterways security mission and protecting all of the critical infrastructure, as well as the Staten Island Ferry that we can see out your window here from
right.
where we're sitting.
Well, and it's obvious that you have a good relationship with all of the players, from pilots to the, I remember on 9/11 a museum boat responded, but it was, I think, probably the September 11th incident that helped then further foster this good relationship you have with all of the maritime components here in New York Harbor.
Yeah, that's certainly been one of the things that I truly appreciate and value. And having been here now for a little bit more than a year, is the strength of the partnership that we have here in New York. And, you know, as you know, one of the Commandant's guiding principles is strengthening partnerships. Well, the good news is those partnerships were alive and well and strong here in New York. And so it allows a level of discussion on challenging, complex topics that that you don't always find in other ports, and allows us to truly, as partners, lean in and get done what needs to get done and look for areas to continue to improve. In fact, I've just come from one of the coordinating committees that we use to do that, the Harbor Operations Committee, which is not a federal advisory committee. It's a long-standing committee here in the port that brings together the key port partners to ensure that we've got those partnerships in place and understand what each other's capacities are and roles in times of a challenge.
Well, obviously, things changed in the maritime and the shipping community after September 11th, being, if not the largest, arguably one of the largest ports in the United States. How did the events of September 11th change shipping and, more importantly, kind of port operations here in New York?
There were obviously a number of changes after September 11th, and as there was the immediate response here in the New York area with regard to the evacuation of Lower Manhattan. Shipping was stopped, and just trying to understand where the threats were and weren't. As we moved forward after that event, and you saw the Maritime Transportation Security Act come into effect, and the whole host of requirements then for vessels and for facilities, obviously the Coast Guard plays an integral role in implementing and enforcing those regulations. From a Coast Guard organizational capacity, many of the things that changed were, for example, Coast Guard Station New York, which is on Staten Island, is now the largest small boat station that the Coast Guard has. I don't know their number pre-9/11, but they're currently a 12-boat station, and that reflects the need to grow some of the inherent response capacity here. We vet ships now, always did or did before 9/11, but now with a 96-hour window in advance. We work in close cooperation with Customs and Border Patrol on many of those vetting decisions. Mm-hmm. And you see much greater integration now, both within the Coast Guard staffing and how and what a boarding team looks like when it goes out to a ship at Ambrose to be boarded and cleared for arrival. And often those teams will include customs or any other law enforcement partners that may need to access that ship. And that's definitely something that's grown and improved since 9/11, where you see much more integrated federal partnership in how mm-hmm. how we screen and ensure that those vessels that are calling and those facilities that are here are fully compliant with all of the safety and security regulations.
You know, it wasn't too long ago I had an opportunity to actually kind of see that partnership between CBP and the Coast Guard. We had a container ship had picked up some German survivors that were, I don't know, 1,000 miles off the coast and had been rescued, but they were being brought back in mm-hmm. to New York to the container terminal over near where the Catherine Walker ties up. And because there were these extra people on the ship that mm-hmm. weren't there when she departed her, her last port of call, Coast Guard, we were there to recognize the crew. And, of course, this was a good news story. So mm-hmm. It's not that we had to de-escalate, but we wanted to put the focus on the crew having done something quite extraordinary and heroic. But Customs and Border Protection people had to be there as well, just mm-hmm. to kind of, make sure that the there were extra people right. that weren't there. And it was to me, it appeared seamless. I mean, the professionalism and the way that the CBP folks worked closely with our Coast Guard personnel really showed that that there is that unity of mission, and that these people were, let's recognize that a good thing was done. Let's also recognize that the ship needs to get this cargo off as right. quickly as possible and, reload containers and get out. And it did seem to work pretty well.
Yeah, there's a daily coordinating call with CBP. In addition to having access to, information in, the same information in the same databases, we do a morning coordinating call to help ensure that that's, in fact, kind of seamless service delivery to the port community. In the meantime, some of the other things that have happened since 9/11, we're beginning within the Coast Guard to develop and actually implement within some of the command centers tools to help with that collaboration. Again, the goal is that when a ship presents itself to come into the port area, that anyone on the federal or state side that needs to access that vessel, that it's done as seamlessly and transparently as possible for the ship, so that all the you know, all of the regulations can be ensured that they are complying with, but not impede their need to continue to move and handle cargo. One of the tools that we're beginning to roll out within our command center is called WatchKeeper, and it's designed to help with some of the collaboration that we're already doing with phone calls and in other mechanisms. It'll just take us to another level of transparency with some of that that coordinating that happens literally day in and day out in this port because of the volume of commerce that comes and goes.
Sure, and we've on this podcast we've discussed in the past, you know, what ships can expect when they're coming into the port, so there are no surprises there. All of these checklists are available online, and I'll include a link in the show notes to the previous post about what ships can expect. But what does the future look like? I mean, obviously, as the economy improves, presumably commerce will pick up and even more things will come in. Any changes coming to the port, expansions or anything in the future that...
obviously the port is about a year and a half from completing the 50-foot deepening project. That will increase the size of some of the ships that may start calling. The industry obviously continues to look for ways to continue to move cargo as efficiently as possible. And so whether it's new and innovative fuels for vessels, it's kind of a constant movement forward with the industry and with us as a regulatory agency. I don't see big changes coming in the future. I will kind of go back to the partnership comment I made here. Those partnerships are going to continue to be even more important than they've been in the past. There's no one of us, either on the federal side, either of the states, or the city of New York, that have all of the capacity or resources that we need to respond to a truly major event in and around the city. And if you only need to approach Manhattan once by water to get that this truly is an island and that very much constrained by water. And so that need to continue to work together collectively as maritime agencies in the area, that need will just continue. And it's definitely been a great group of folks that are all there and leaned in to get that done and make sure that commerce is able to move quickly and efficiently.
Well, I think that was demonstrated just this past weekend when Hurricane Irene came through. I mean, the Amber office is here in Lower Manhattan. Any time of the day or night, you can look out the window and see hundreds of small boats to large ships out in the water. And I was home and watching news coverage from Lower Manhattan on one of the cable channels, and you could see behind the reporter that there was absolutely nothing on the water. And that alone takes a lot of coordination, and I think it demonstrates that partnership that you have. Ultimately, it's the Coast Guard. It's you as the captain of the port that makes that call on the various port conditions, whether it be X-ray or whiskey who's allowed in and who's allowed out.
Right, so. And the way we work that storm preparation going into the weekend was I used a series of afternoon kind of coordinating calls to signal my intentions for the next 24-hour period that allowed the port community plenty of lead time and to understand where we needed to be at a certain point the next day, and then allowed us to get to a position where by 1800 on Saturday, with the storm predicted to come in after nightfall, have all the large ships at sea, the barges were all buttoned down, the waterways had stopped moving. Obviously, the city had closed down the public transportation system, which stopped a lot of the passenger movements. Mm-hmm. And then by noon the next day on Sunday, it was apparent that we'd sort of seen the worst of the storm. And then talking to the great partnership we have, we were able to, with the assistance of the Sandy Hook pilots and the Metro pilots, get onto the water and start doing our waterways assessments, so that by 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon we were ready to start moving ships.
So it was business as usual.
Yeah. And then obviously the vessel traffic system helps a great deal with that, and beginning the orchestrated and appropriate kind of priority and moving his ships back in. But the only the Sandy Hook Channel was the only thing that took then an additional 24 hours, just because it's prone to shoaling because of the sand the sandy beach there off the hook.
I guess calling that a delicate ballet is perhaps an understatement, because it's a pretty significant coordinating event for your VTS folks.
It was definitely a significant coordinating event, and it the minute you start talking about saying we're going to slow this down and sort of stop everybody from moving for a time period, your absolute next thought has to be, how are we going to start it up again, and what and how? So we were beginning to have the conversations on how are we going to begin moving and kind of reconstituting. We were having those conversations Friday afternoon, 30 hours or plus before we had everything what I kind of call ground hold. Let's hold and
sure.
Figure out where we need to be when the storm
passes. You really need to be three steps ahead of where you are.
You do. And you're talking about watching the forecast from the lower Manhattan. I knew it was a bad sign when Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel showed up right outside of our offices here. And in fact, I think the Battery Building parking lot was in one of those broadcasts.
I think you're right. And the challenges are obviously for your team and for the folks at in the sector at the command center are more than just, you've got guys in ships who are like, when can we come in? And then you have the whole shoreside component. You've got charterers and you've got other folks who are calling up, hey, I need to get my cargo off first. So, you faced a significant challenge. And I think we really, dodging a bullet is perhaps, another understatement. But the port fared pretty well in the whole scheme
of things. It did. And I obviously would not wish a hurricane on anyone. And obviously some of the communities, in fact, just 30 miles west of here, were very significantly impacted by the rain, and obviously the states to the north. But the storm was significant enough here that as a port community, we are all much better prepared for another storm event, whether it's this summer or in subsequent summers. Definitely a number of lessons learned and good practices that we're busy incorporating and updating our hurricane plan as the Coast Guard to help provide some transparency and predictability to our thought processes and where and how the port community can expect some of those decision points. But in addition to all of the commercial port, we still had search and rescue going on as well. We obviously needed to move our resources out of harm's way, and the plan calls for all our small boats to go up the river to West Point and north, which then leaves us unable to respond to search and rescue to the two guys early in the morning on Sunday in Weboken that decided to go swimming in the height of the storm, those kinds of things. So certainly the other waterway users other than the commercial community do need to remember that that storms are serious events, and that the water needs to be treated with respect.
Oh, absolutely. If you had one piece of advice, if I'm a ship owner, I'm new to the shipping industry, and I want to start bringing in cargo or commerce into the Port of New York, what one bit of advice would you give me if I'm deciding I want to make New York my next port call?
Well, if New York's going to be your next port call and you're going to be a regular caller in New York, I'd offer to you, you need to come see us over at our sector command center on Staten Island. Come meet the people that you're going to be talking to on the radio, the folks in my waterways department that'll be doing the broadcast and waterways permits. Come meet me and the rest of the staff. It's always much better to meet over a cup of coffee when nothing is going on than to be talking on the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning in the middle of a major event. But I'd offer that for any port in the country. Get to know that Coast Guard team, because they really are. I believe we're allies. We're not. This is about providing transparency and predictability, and we're all want that same outcome at the end, which is ships moving seamlessly in and out of our ports and without anything going bump in the night where we may find ourselves with a major response.
Well, and I would add, you are a very approachable person despite your schedule and the the city that never sleeps. I mean, New York is a busy place, and there isn't a minute that you're probably not going from one place to another, but you are approachable and you're available. And I would tell our readers and our listeners that if you have questions for Captain Fagan, for the New York Harbor Captain of the Port, that you can leave comments on the blog, and I'll be happy to forward those on to Captain Fagan. And if we have listener or reader questions, I trust that you'll answer them.
Yep.
So I appreciate you taking a couple of minutes to talk with us today. I know that you probably got something else to dash off to here shortly. And I know, or at least I hope, our AMVR participants look forward to doing business here in New York. And we'll certainly forward on those questions. And thank you again.
Okay. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Quarterdeck, Learn more about the Amber program at amber.com. The Quarterdeck theme song is called Botany Bay by the Blackguards, available at musicalley.com or follow the link in our show notes.
I'm on the way down to the quay where the good ship and anchor lays. To command the gang of navvies, they told me to engage. Well, I thought I'd stop in for a pint before I went away. But I take a trip on an emigrant ship to the shores of Botany Bay.